I remember.
Meeting will come to order. We don't yet have a quorum, so we won't officially move the bill, but all members, all the bills today will be held over for possible inclusion in the capital investment omnibus bill. We have Representative Huntley starting us off with health care and human services bond recommendations. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, it's a pleasure to be here. What our committee did is to recommend the following items, two of which the governor recommended: that the system-wide asset preservation, basically for regional treatment centers, and some remodeling, that's $5 million and $4.5 million. Those are two that the governor recommended. We also recommended for the Department of Human Services remodeling at the Anoka Treatment Center for about $380,000. The Awa Chang Regional Treatment Center, which we're trying to get out from under. And hopefully this is the final amount of money that's basically cleanup, because that is being transferred to the, I don't know if the county or the city, and ultimately there'll be a private non-for-profit hospital built on that site. So this is the final thing. And Representative Howes guaranteed us he would never be back for Awa Chang if we pass this. One we did not approve, or we put a medium ranking, was the Moose Lake Regional Treatment Center for Sexual Predators. The governor did not approve that. It's $90 million. It's going to have to be done sooner or later, but I think the governor did not approve, did not support that because of the dollar amount this year. We have approved also two grants to local units, one is a Native American juvenile treatment facility that will be located in Bemidji. It will be run by the White Earth Reservation. And the $6 million is to buy a facility that's already there. It was a facility used for treatment of addicted teenagers, and so the tribe is going to take that over and do the same thing. And as I'm sure you all know, that Indian populations have a much higher incidence of chemical dependency and other problems than the rest of the population. So this is a needed facility. The last one is Hennepin County Medical Center, and I've handed out a sheet. They are building, I think it's about a $170 million facility, and this would just fund $28 million for the educational part of that building. Some of it will be for clinical, but $28 million would be for the educational facility. And if you look at this list on the left, the health professions that get training at that facility is an unbelievable number. If you look at the right of that top one, the affiliated institutions that send their students to Hennepin County Medical Center for their clinical training, and while they're collecting tuition for those students, that money doesn't show up at Hennepin County Medical Center. And I just want to give a little pitch for Hennepin County. I was at a Range and Duluth Medical Society meeting a couple of years ago, and I asked, there was about 50 docs there, and I said, how many of you got part of your training at Hennepin County Medical Center? And it was like 80-90% had done part of their training. And so this is, and to be blunt, normally I would not say that we should use state dollars to fund hospitals that are not state hospitals, but in this case it's just for the educational component. And for all practical purposes, Hennepin County Hospital and its education system is really part of the University of Minnesota. Not officially, but they do so much of the training for University of Minnesota students that I think this is an appropriate amount. with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And members, you have then three items, the representative listing, a spreadsheet, and then I believe, Representative Huntley, this language is yours that accompanies the. This is the House File 2091. Is there any language that you need that's beyond the...
You're going to have to do an amendment if you approve the White Earth, the Indian Treatment Center, because the language has changed. And originally it was for design, now it's for the purchase of that property.
And someone's made...
Madam Chair? I'd make that amendment.
Did you want to amend that now?
I don't have to do that now.
Withdraw the amendment.
Bill Haas is their lobbyist, and he can talk to you and give you the proper language later.
Representative Junkie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to the bill, but just to Hennepin County or the hospital. When we were out there, I asked for a list of... They give us all these large numbers of people they train, and I wanted a list on where they end up geographically around the state. I have not received that yet, so that would be helpful in contemplating this item.
I think, you cited the anecdotal story of 80% of physicians up on the Iron Range in Duluth, but if there is such a list, that would be helpful.
We can get that
information that the committee would have. Representative Carlson. Oh, Representative Dunkey, further question? Representative Carlson?
Yeah, I just got a meeting going on the
Further questions? Any further questions? If not, some concluding comments, Representative Huntley?
Madam Chair, just the we do this every year as far as the rehabbing the regional treatment centers or tearing buildings down. It costs a lot of money to keep those buildings empty. And so that part we should really do, and I would really someday like to have a ribbon cutting for a demolition and see how many House members would show up for that.
Members, we do now have a quorum, and so I will move House File 2091 and recommend that this will be held over for possible inclusion in the Capital Investment Committee. No further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Junkie, will you move minutes of February 19th?
So moved.
Any corrections, questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. And we have now Representative Hilty. And Representative Scalzi moves House File 1392.
So moved.
And this also will be held over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And members, you have that information in your first green packet.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, three proposals that came before the Energy Policy and Finance Division. They're all reflected in the bill that you have before you. I did ask members of the committee to each individually make their own recommendations to these projects, and the recommendations included in the bill reflect that. The highest priority for the committee was the green bonds proposal, Representative Knuth's bill. a medium priority was the waste-to-energy demonstration project. That was Representative Thiessen's bill, and a lower priority in the committee's view was the steam line extension project, Representative Norton's project in Rochester, which would move a steam line, or not move, but connect a steam line between their waste-to-energy facility and the community college in Rochester. Madam Chair and members, I think all of these projects do certainly have merit, and the prioritizing, I think, was in part due to the committee's understanding of the more general priorities of the bonding bill. What we could do that would get projects going as fast as possible. I would say about the steam line extension project that that's certainly something that I think needs to happen. It's a good idea. I think the concern of the committee, and I have to say it was mine as well, is the cost seemed kind of out of line with the nature of the project. This is a 1.25-mile extension, the estimated cost of which is $12 million, which works out to about $1,800 a foot, which seemed kind of pricey, frankly, and I think possibly Representative Norton might have some ability to go back to the folks in Rochester and see if that price tag could be adjusted a little bit. As far as the Green Bonds project, we felt that that did have a great deal of merit. What it would provide is grants to local units of government, including schools, basically to make up the difference in cost between doing the sort of standard run-of-the-mill construction that we always end up doing because of cost considerations and doing a more green project, which in the short run might be more expensive, but in the long run would have a very significant payback.
Representative Pilkey, we often ask this this question on the green bonds, the high priority. When we think about scaling back numbers, what are meaningful numbers beyond below which a project wouldn't really be workable anymore? Do you have any sense of that as we look at that dollar amount?
Madam Chair, I don't really. I think that given the nature of the proposal, which is basically to have a pool of money to fund various projects, it's very difficult to predict. It could probably be less than $10 million. I would hate to see it go much lower than that because if there's not enough money in the pool, there's hardly any point going to the trouble of considering making these grants if we can only make a handful.
Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed that the steam line extension requires a comparable contribution from Homestead County, $6 million. Are they going to have the capacity to do that, to the best of your knowledge?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, that was the testimony that we had in the committee.
Representative Mahoney, were you finished? Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hilty, on page 4 of your bill, section D, paragraph D, talks about at line 418, grants may only be provided for additional construction and renovation costs that would not be covered from energy savings within 5 years. So what you're saying is they would have anything that's not recoverable for the first 5 years or for the second 5 years. Is that what that grant might cover?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, I think the basic idea of the proposal is that many green additions to a building do have a very long payback, and so are very commonly not considered justifiable in terms of, you know, doing something at the lowest possible cost initially. So it would, what would be included here are only the features that would be added that would have a longer payback than 5 years. If they're capable of that short of payback, it would be regarded as being sufficiently quick to be justified in the initial proposal.
I was just looking for clarification whether it was the first 5 years or the second 5 years. Thank you.
No further questions. That bill will be held over for possible inclusion, and we thank you, Representative Hilty, for coming before the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Representative Slawick. Representative Scalzi moves House File 2551. To be held over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today I bring you the bill from the Early Childhood Learning Finance Division. We really just have two projects for your consideration. First of all, in Article 1, we want you to know that we're ranking Article 2 as our first priority and Article 3 as our second priority. In Article 2, what we have is an early childhood learning and child protection facilities. We're asking for $5 million. And what these are grants to construct or rehabilitate facilities for early childhood programs. We know, members, as we're trying to get more kids ready for school and have those quality programs out there, it helps if the facilities are in the shape that they need to be. And then in Article 2, or Article 3, we have $3 million for the Austin Area Success Center, which is Representative Poppy's bill. We also heard from her and from her committee, but it ranked that as our second priority. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Questions for Representative Flawick? Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Flawick, I've got a couple questions. On page 1 with the grant authority, you're taking out some existing language.
Mm-hmm.
With priority to centers and counties or municipalities with the highest percentage of children living in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
I see Cass County, Hubbard County, Beltrami County written all over that. Could you tell me why that's being there?
Representative Flawick.
Madam Chair and Representative House, I know that we just moved it around. If you look on page 2.14, you will see that it just moves the language to projects in counties and municipalities with the highest percentage of children living in poverty. So the changes you see of the deletions, mainly the language has moved to other areas. This bill still does focus on children in the counties that have the greatest percentage of poverty. I do believe Cass County is one of those.
Madam Chair, I have one more question.
House.
Then on page 2, starting on line 33, grant for programs that will increase their child care workers' wages as a result of the grant, and then you're removing language that I think this applied mostly to youth build programs. Does Representative Clark know what you're doing?
Yes, we have talked to there. No, Madam Chair, Representative House, if you look back up into, again, 2.18, you will see that language is back in there. So it was, again, kind of a reshuffling. We have worked very hard. I saw Representative Clark in the room with her to keep her language in there, and we've had extensive discussions about it.
Thank you.
Any further questions? No, if not, thank you. The bill will be held over. Thank you. And now we have Representative Greiling. Representative Scalzi.
Madam Chair, I move that, and I see the House file is
2550 would be moved, 2558 to be moved, held over for possible inclusion in the capital budget bonding bill.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Grimes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Scalzi, and thank you to the members of the committee. We have Representative Murphy's bill for our omnibus education finance bill because, first of all, we said because Representative Murphy is Representative Murphy, and also because Representative Murphy authored the library bill, which was, when we had our committee process, our top committee priority. That was, we thought, apple pie and motherhood and fair to the whole state, and so we made that our omnibus bill. And we did have a process where we asked all of our members, Republican and Democrat, on the Education Finance Committee to hear all the bills and then to rank them high, medium, or low. And what the whole committee did is what you see in front of you. The highest priority was the library capital improvement loans, which goes just to basic library improvements all around the state. Our second priority is the Red Lake facilities capital loan, and they have absolutely no property wealth, and so they are a state responsibility, and this money is for completing their high school. Many of you have toured Red Lake. I have toured Red Lake myself, and we know that they have quite a hodgepodge of starting a project and then getting a little more money from us and starting again, and hence they have trouble with different contractors, electrical systems that don't match, and so we are very interested in not hearing about that again and having this project be totally completed. So we feel very strongly that they get the full amount, and then we will, with the help of Monty and Dolores Hammett, who are here, hold them to finishing, and we look forward to going up there and finishing, to seeing that beautiful finished product. The other high priorities are the state academies in Faribault, their asset preservation, which of course is also a state responsibility that we keep up those buildings for our students who are deaf or blind. We also have the state responsibility and therefore a high priority for asset preservation at the Purvis Center in St. Louis Park. And we really put keeping asset preservation at the top of our list. These are things that can be done right away and are needed. Our medium priority, and before I go to those, I just want to say that in the Education Finance Committee, we feel that even our medium priorities and even our low priorities are higher than some of the other priorities that you might be considering. So we want to put that caveat in there that a medium priority in the Education Committee, I think, would be a really high priority on this committee. We have two more projects for the state academies, the Mott Hall vocational renovation, the Pollard Hall Day Treatment Center, where there are many students who are blind or deaf also have a mental illness and need some specialized care, so they don't have to be shipped out of state, which is good for them and their families, but also costs us a lot of money. The Boys' Dorm for Chef Hall needs a replacement pre-design, and then the Perfect Center, the dorm windows and their master plan to look at what they're planning ahead for. And then also on a medium priority is the Northwest Hennepin Family Center grant. And this is one our committee liked very well. It's truly a regional project. It involves a lot of other school districts, a lot of other agencies, and they have also raised an impressive amount of private dollars to have this one-stop shopping for the kind of students who need this kind of help. We have schools like this in the Achievement Plus schools in St. Paul. We don't think of a school district like Osseo and in the Hennepin suburban area as needing a school like this, but yet when we looked at the demographics there, they have 40% students of color, a lot of high-need students, and this would be putting something in the suburbs where there are also a lot of high-need students. They aren't all in the urban core anymore. We also have, as a medium priority, renewable energy school projects, school districts that testified in our committee on this. Tell us that they not only can recoup their costs, but they save money in the long term. If they can just have some help getting their communities to buy into this. I know Representative Pinglestad is sitting right here, has worked on this a lot, too. And this is just for, it would go a long ways with this money because it's just for the design and the drafting of a plan, and then the school districts would go ahead and fund it on themselves. And then finally, a medium priority is the Rushford-Peterson request, which is, of course, where they had the flooding. They did have FEMA dollars for their the flood damage, but then they're still left with a very old building. Our low priorities, and I would like to stress, these are high priorities compared to a lot of your requests, I think, would be the Ogden Conger Community Center grant, which is similar to the Northwest Hennepin one, but they haven't done quite as much of the private fundraising as the other one. United South Central Cooperative Facilities Grant. This one is very compelling. It's a bill down in Wells where they haven't been able to pass a bond for 40 years. But just in the ranking, it's at the low priority, not because they don't have a need, but because there's lots of other school districts, schools like that, and we really need to find, I think, a good solution in the Education Finance Committee for schools like that. But if you have are looking for one of our low priorities, that's a very high low priority. And then we have the Perfect Center, one more of their requests for prefab storage buildings and for Northampton Hennepin Riverview Elementary Prairie Restoration Project. And that, Madam Chair, are our priorities.
And members, you remember we visited Forsett Hall, and at the time they were still thinking of renovating. And since we have been down there, they have determined to, in fact, build a new building, so they're asking only for pre-design. And the question is where that will be built, whether they take down that building or whether that building is rented to Shattuck, which would have slightly different needs and maybe would find that space more workable. So that one has, that request has changed somewhat since we visited that area. Questions of Representative Greiling? Representative Finkelstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling, thank you for putting this together. I know there's a lot of thought that goes into this. I just had a comment, you know, as our Capital Investment Committee made site visits this year, you know, we saw a lot of the MinSU facilities, University of Minnesota Higher Ed. We saw just a few K-12 facilities, but, you know, obviously I've done a lot of work with K-12 facilities through the years. The one item that really struck me, and especially seeing United South Central, was the need that we have in our K-12 facilities. And I'm worried that we help the higher ed system much more than we help the K-12 system. And as I think about some of those life and safety issues that are at health and safety issues that are at United South Central with mold situations, poor ventilation, I mean, just that seems like that school is really piecemealed together, and it's very sad. And I think if it was a MinSU facility, it would have been condemned or it would have been totally rebuilt years ago. And I think there's an inequity, and I know that this is a major issue that K-12 is looking at with how things are funded. But quite frankly, Madam Chair, I'm concerned that, you know, we are mandating our K-12 students to be in those facilities, and we have a responsibility as a state to make sure that that's a healthy environment. Certainly it's nice to have things appropriate for higher ed, but those people have a choice of being there, and they can pay more tuition if they'd like or go to another school. We don't allow that flexibility for our K-12 students. So I'm very concerned when we see situations like United South Central, and then we see, you know, contrast that to some of our MinSU facilities, and it's just very much inequity in our system.
Thank you. Representative Greiling, I know that when you pointed this one out, you said it was a high-low priority, and you referenced the need, but you also said there are a lot of others out there waiting. Do you have a sense of how big is that problem?
Representative Hausman, members of the committee, Representative Tingle said it's a huge problem. When there was a Senate study committee on this about 3 or 4 years ago, the backlog of maintenance for K-12 buildings is about 4
billion dollars. It's a serious thing. And the Representative Tingle said makes a very good point. There are many K-12 schools in, you know, pathetic condition, and when you go to higher ed buildings, they're nothing to compare to the situation in our K-12 buildings in most cases. And we're very concerned about it. The difference is, of course, they're mandated to be there. That's the difference. Another difference is the school districts can levy, if they can pass a bond, to deal with this situation, whereas higher ed institutions cannot. And that's why we've had them traditionally in this bill rather than K-12. But we are engaged this year in a huge undertaking in our committee looking at how schools are funded, how they're fairly funded through the PS Minnesota education finance recommendations. We've had a joint Senate and House committee looking at how we should be fairly funding our schools, and more importantly, how we should be adequately funding our schools, which we're not doing. And then Representative Tim Faust has had a task force studying facilities in particular, where we're going to spend an entire day in our committee hearing, and probably should spend more if it wasn't such a short session, looking at a plethora of bills on K-12 facilities and how to, you know, it's been suggested we should just let districts levy, just let them levy, like cities and counties can do, and they can take care of this problem. I'll tell you what, for Wells, which is this United South Central Cooperative Facilities School, that isn't a very fair or adequate answer. Mm-hmm. Because they don't have property wealth. They have more than Red Lake, but they don't have a lot of it. And if they were allowed to levy and we had equalization for the $20 million they need, they would get from us 15 of that $20 million. Mm-hmm. But we have allowed debt service equalization to atrophy down where in a couple of years there won't be any of it for school districts like this. And so if they do just levy, they would have to do it with their homeowners and their farms. And last year, we had the answer, quite frankly, in Representative Paul Marquardt's bill, where we had funding for debt service equalization, and we had ag credit in there. You have to also have the ag credit, because even with the debt service equalization, the farms would pay disproportionate, and some of these communities with lots of farmers then could kill a bond vote if there were one, or they could kill off the school board members if they didn't have a vote, and then they would never have any courage to ever levy again. So we know the answer. We know it's debt service equalization. We know it's ag credit, and we know it's just plain more operating capital for schools so they can keep maintaining their buildings. And I hope all of you that see that you're not going to be able to do everything we need, and that it isn't fair to K-12 compared to higher ed, will support what we are doing in the K-12 committee. Other states are making this financial investment in their schools. We are not. We are losing our place internationally. So thank you, Representative Tinglestad, for bringing that up.
And it is appropriate that Representative Tinglestad brings it up. I remember members... a number of years ago when we had the, quote, boatloads of money, and we gave $3 billion back, Representative Tinglestad had a bill at the time, and she quantified the need at the time statewide of $1.5 billion in her bill. We could have done that entire backlog just like that and still had 1.5. And I mean, those are those missed opportunities that you just look back to. And Representative Murphy.
Do you remember, you said, you start out with that they have not passed an issue for in 40 years. How many times did they try?
Madam Chair, the last time they tried,
the last time they tried was in, I believe it was 2004. And they were so shot down that they just haven't tried again because we have, you know, back when we had debt service equalization, it was like 85% to 15% over that they didn't pass it. So it's just overwhelming. They have, on top of not having property wealth, they have such a conservative community. And that is why we can't leave school funding up to the individual voter. This should only be for extras. It should not be for
building maintenance or basic things that all students need, because even if we put in all this equalization, there are many communities who you could have money laying in the street and they would not pass the votes needed to take it. So we really have to do better at the state level, because it's in our Constitution to be fair to all kids.
Representative Carlson?
Well, I was going to say there's another side issue here, Madam Chair, as a follow-up to what Representative is pointing out. With open enrollment, some of these school districts that have inadequate facilities, students that are in a position geographically, I suppose, to open enroll in another school district do that, and it simply aggravates the operating budget for those school districts to lose the enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
That's another side of the whole question.
Were you finished?
Yes.
Representative Duncan.
Just another comment, too. You said it's a conservative community. That's not necessarily true. I grew up there, and that was Henry Collis and Tracy Beckman's area for a long time. And so they go back and forth on representation. But the other problem that, again, we haven't talked about, like Representative Carlson just said, with the open enrollment problem, it's also a consolidation problem. Down there where the school's located, well, they vote for the levy every time it comes up. But Keister and Walters and some of these smaller towns do not, because they're mad that the school's over in Wells. And so they fail it, Wells passes it, and it goes nowhere. So there's a lot of lingering out there in a lot of districts, and I have some in my area now, too, where that consolidation issue, it's like the Iron Range Alzheimer's. You forget everything but the grudges, and they're still out there with that. So,
Tom doesn't have a grudge in his body.
Representative Rufino.
Well, Madam Chair, you know, I've always, in my 21 years here, found it absolutely deplorable that the only people we can vote against in this state for buildings are kids. You want to build a playpen for criminals? Just build it, you know, county can build it. Or toy shop for forensic plane, just build it. But kids, you get to go out and vote against. And, you know, maybe, Madam Chair, what you should do is a study on how the counties came here in the cities and got their referendum votes lifted out of law, and the only ones left are the kids. And we're it's in St. Louis County now, they want to build another jail. Now, we got 40,000 less people than we did 20 years ago, but I see the, you know, the new cottage industry, cops, corrections, and courts are here asking for money today, and, you know, we can't vote against that, but we can vote against our children all the time, and if something should be done, either they should go back on, or the school district should be allowed to just levy like counties and cities can.
Concluding comments, Representative Freiling.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the thoughtfulness on this committee, and it sounds like people here put a high priority on schools, and so I appreciate your considering our recommendations today, and I look forward to your support for our K-12 recommendations, which will address these issues in a more comprehensive way for our students all around the state.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Clark?
Madam Chair?
Representative
I would move House File 2734 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the capital investment bill.
Clark, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I bring you the recommendations from the Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance Division. And I can tell you that we have four bonding proposals. They were all unanimously approved bipartisanly and given high priority. And together, the goal of this is to meet the needs of individuals and families who are homeless after a long period of time, and those who are also newly homeless. It provides support programs for people who are at risk of long-term homelessness and who need emergency shelter and transitional housing. And it also works with Hennepin County to help fund a one-stop shop, which cuts a lot of red tape for people who need help. And then there's also a proposal in here to provide housing for seniors and disabled individuals for public housing that's at risk. So I'll just go through. The supportive housing portion of this was still that Representative Benson brought us the governor's proposal. It provides use of 501c3 bonds that would be issued by MHSA to finance the supportive housing that would be owned by a nonprofit. And this particular tool of bonding does a number of things. It reduces legal administrative costs and makes it much easier than some of the deal bonding that's been done in the past, much less complex. It would be used to finance permanent supportive housing, again, for persons experiencing long-term homelessness. These are the people who have been chronically homeless, and turned out on the streets for years and years. Right now, we estimate there's about more than 4,400 people who are in that category. Almost 60% have mental illness, 34% have chemical dependency, 25% have a combination of those diagnoses, and 15% are veterans. These are people who really have had a hard time getting into any kind of housing. And so this new form of bonding would be, it's actually not totally new, it's kind of bonding that was used to fund the stadium at the University of Minnesota, and I believe is being proposed for the biotech bonding as well. So there would be a standing appropriation in our committee, there would be up to $2.4 million in debt service, but not in this biennium, not until 2009. So that's the governor's proposal, $30 million. The Housing Development Fund was a Representative Moe proposal, $10 million request that can be used to provide funding for emergency shelter, the publicly owned temporary or transitional housing, and publicly owned rental, permanent rental housing. And this provides flexibility that's really needed, especially for some of the newly homeless, so we're not waiting for people to become chronically homeless. We're getting them, especially with the tidal wave of foreclosures that are coming, we think this might be very helpful for some of those families. They do need to contribute to this housing when that's available. In this case, nearly half of the people who are needing this type of housing are young people under age 22, half are children in homeless families that are under age 5, and 28% of adults who are homeless are working. This provides stable housing so they can have a steady job. The other request is for public housing rehabilitation. We've got a lot of our public housing that's been serving elderly and disabled persons for years and years are at risk. There's a lot of problems with that housing. Some of it has been sold. This is an effort to try to stave off selling that housing. Once it's lost, it's impossible to replace at current cost. This serves very low-income residents. 64% of public housing households are headed by seniors or people with disabilities, and their average income is about $12,000. We have more than 20,000 public housing households that serve 36,000 people, including 12,000 children. So this, as I mentioned, this housing stock is aging. A lot of it's over 35 years old, some even more, and they need improvements and repairs, and this would help pay for that. Just in terms of the loss, we lost 80 units in the last few years because of the lack of funding to do the repairs and so on. The next part of the Arvani proposal is the Hennepin County Opportunity Center, brought to us by Representative Kornstein. This is a $2.5 million match request for a one-stop shopping to help people who are homeless be able to get connected with the services and the various opportunities that they might have to reach employment and training opportunities, find housing, veteran services, specialized services for women and children. And we have one other part of the bill requires that MHFA meet with stakeholders to look at how we could be creative in MHFA to look at the issue of preventing residential foreclosures by working with potentially neighborhood land trusts and bringing some of those folks together and looking would they be able to work with some of these 501c3 bonds or other ways. So, and so that's basically the bill. Those four
questions of Representative Clark. Well, Representative Dunphy.
Just one question, Representative Clark. Do you know the breakdown historically of this money that goes out state versus metro on these housing projects?
Representative Clark.
As I recall, the testimony from the MHFA is that this is spread all over, especially when you're talking about public housing. Many of our districts have public housing, and their intention is to make sure that there can be housing throughout the whole state. We don't want everybody to get a bus ticket and come into the core city, which is what's happening a lot now because there aren't services and the housing isn't located out there.
Is MHFA in the room? We'll make a note and see if we can get an answer to that. No further questions? Representative Clark, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Yarrow.
Madam Chair.
Representative Scalzi?
I move House File 2703 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the capital investment bill.
Welcome to committee, Representative Yarrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Lady, and members of the Capital Investment Committee. This is the Minnesota Heritage request, and as you know, there's nothing more important in the state than our heritage.
Members, just to interrupt, this wasn't in your packet. The information is coming around. Maybe we'll give just a minute. While they're passing that out, I have to tell you, we often thank staff, but I just cannot tell you how much I appreciate all of the work that went into getting ready for today. For all of those committees to have finished their work at the end of the week, and then magically, by Monday morning, staff is to get ready for the next meeting. I want staff to know we understand. I know people were still here on Friday night. I suspect there was work over the weekend, and we just cannot thank you enough for being willing to accommodate these schedules. And so if the next number of them are being passed out as the members come before you. Representative Yarrow.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, first one is public broadcasting, public TV, public radio, and the AMPERS, the educational radio, for their digital conversion, three bills by Representative Kahn, $11 million. Amateur Sports Commission is the $16.111 million, and it includes National Volleyball Center in Rochester by Representative Norton, Ceylon Youth Softball Field Lighting by Representative Gunter, Highland K-70 Ski Jump in Bloomington by Representative Neil Peterson, Accessible Baseball Field for Children with Disabilities, Representative Atkins, Badger Indoor Ice Arena, Representative Olin, Northwestern Minnesota Regional Sports Center in Moorhead, Representative Lanning, Mighty Ducks Ice Arena Grants, Representatives Atkins and Prance, Southwestern Regional Sports Facility in Marshall, Representative Seifert, Metro North Regional Sports Facility pre-designed by Representative Knuth, Hallock Ice Arena, Representative Olin, National Sports Center Asset Preservation in Blaine, Representative Hortman, St. Paul Regional Amateur Sports Facility, pre-designed again by Representative Atkins. The next is Lake Superior Zoo Polar Bear Exhibit Expansion by me, and Lake Superior Mississippi Railroad, the Tourist Scenic Railway, also introduced by me. The Historical Society, a total of about $38.3 million. Historic Sites Asset Preservation by Representative Mariani. This one was recommended by the Governor. Minnesota Agricultural Interpretive Center, I believe it's in Waseca, by Representative Cornish. Oliver H. Kelly Farm Revitalization, pre-designed and designed by Representative Hackbarth. Hinckley Fire State Museum Repair and Restoration by Representative Faust. Heritage Trails and Historic Sites by Representative Morrow. Wells Train Depot Renovation Pre-Design, Representative Cornish again. Historic Fort Snelling Historic Center and Site Revitalization, Representative Slocum. Kensington Area Historical Society Museum and Heritage Center, Representative Westrom. Southeast Minnesota Flood Area Historic Preservation by Representative Schumer. County and Local Historic Preservation Grants by Representative Erdahl. Sorry. Now the Indian Affairs Council, Indian Burial Site Acquisition in Becker County by Representative Eakin, Metropolitan Council, Como Zoo Infrastructure, St. Paul, by Representative Hoffman, Zoological Gardens Asset Preservation and master plan design construction by bolstered by Representative Madori. The governor recommended $7.5 million. The total is only $99,171,000. It's about 10% of what I think the bill is going to be, unless we don't override the gas, the transportation bill today. If we don't do it, I think we're going to might lose about almost half, 40% of the bonding bill. And it's really, I hope that we can pass that bill. I assume it's coming up today. Thank you, Madam Chair, Lady, and members.
And members, my understanding is on line 45 that the Historical Society has stepped back for a minute and may take another look at that and have revised their request somewhat just for asset preservation. I don't know if they have been in touch with you. Over the years, I have wished desperately that five players, that Minneapolis Parks Board, Hennepin County, the DNR, Historical Society, and the National Park Service, would all five sit at a table and try to come to some agreement about that wonderful historic space, but that has five planners and players, and sometimes we don't do the best in terms of an overall site plan there. So maybe you and I can work on getting those five players to the table after this legislative session. Representative Carlson has a question.
Looking at one of the big items here is the Amherst Sports Commission. We've got testimony that's one area that generates a fair amount of revenue as a result of participation rates and so on in some of those facilities. I don't think we need testimony here this morning on that, but just to remind folks that when Paul Erickson was before us in Rochester, and I think one other place, he pointed out some of the revenue that's generated.
And members, you may recall that that Amateur Sports Commission gave us their internal priorities, that the National Volleyball Center in Rochester was their number one, that the asset preservation in Blaine was number two, and I don't recall exactly from there on, but at least those were their top two priorities. So we'll get those for you, the priorities.
Madam Chair?
Let me see. I have Representative Lanning and then Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Number three from the Amateur Sports Commission was the Northwestern Regional Sports Center in Moorhead.
Thank you. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess as this committee puts the bill together, I'd like you to consider, and the committee to consider, you see a lot of small local historical projects in here, and there's a bunch of them that aren't in here. I know Spicer could possibly fall into that category too, because they're doing a museum for the airplane out there that they pulled out of Green Lake. But you see Hinckley Fire Museum, Heritage Trails, Wells Depot, Kensington area, et cetera, et cetera. I also don't see the Sheet Music Museum here, the Spicer projects. I mean, there's a number of them that we saw that aren't here. And I'd like you to consider putting more money into the Minnesota Historical Society grant area, because I feel more comfortable, rather than us deciding which of these small projects are worthy and should move forward, go back to the point where we let the experts work with these folks, whether it's sheet music or displaying an airplane or preserving a historic depot. I don't think we should be making that decision. Rather, I'd like to see a pot of money put forward every 2 years that the Historical Society then is directed to work with these entities that come forward. We could probably put that in the bill, these two
say they will work with them on a plan, and then understand what works best. They have expertise, we don't, and some of these towns don't either, to get some advice out in the country. So I guess I just ask that broadly, that as all these little things are here, rather than assigning dollar amounts to them, we might be better off to put one large amount and let the Historical Society experts work with them in the future.
And Representative Erdahl, that would be the nature of your bill, isn't it? Line 48 County and Local Historic Preservation Grant. So maybe we'd be more ambitious with that dollar amount.
Yes, Madam Chair, that'd be a good idea. This is, you know, very important money for our local historical societies across the state, and a lot of valuable projects come out of those grants.
Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chair, but ask the Amateur Sports Commission, and as long as you're getting people to sit down at the table and talk to each other, perhaps we can do something with the high school league and the Amateur Sports Commission, in that some local folks have contacted me about fixing up the track at the Amateur Sports Commission, and when I asked the Sports Commission people about it, and they said that they wanted to do that in the past, but then the high school league wouldn't contract for a period of years to make it worth their while. And so maybe they should talk, because the coaches apparently really wanted to use that facility for their track meets rather than some of the local colleges. And now it's back to the local colleges, when they said it was just a wonderful experience at the Amateur Sports Commission, except that the track needs rehabilitation.
So, Representative Yarles, we might partner with you on some of those conversations. Representative Solberg?
Madam Chair, on page 7, the southeastern Minnesota flood area historic preservation grant for the city of Polka. Wouldn't that have been covered by FEMA or some of the other appropriations we've made? I can understand that some of the other ones are addition to Houston, would not be, but the damage to the for the city of Hoka, I thought was a flood damage related.
Representative Solberg, I think there it is not damaged so much as the suggestion there was, because that region had suffered such damage, could we, by way of rebuilding tourism and infrastructure, partner on some of historic preservation as well?
Okay, thank you.
Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to the committee members, I'm just going to speak to the asset preservation, whether it's the Historical Society or any of the others in this bill or any other bill. We as a state, and we heard Representative Greiling talk about it, the $3 billion. We each and all of our committees has heard the asset preservation and the damage that this state is letting go on a regular basis. And we continue to bring forth new ideas, which is good. But once we get something new, we seem to forget about all the things that we have. And we need to preserve what we have before we start getting too far afield.
And Representative Yarles, I suppose the good news about this is there's a great deal of pride in Minnesota's heritage, and a lot of people who want to celebrate and preserve what is there. I see no further questions, so we thank you very much for bringing these issues before us. And Representative Kahn was not in the room. Oh, Representative, do we have the paperwork for her? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scalzi.
I would move House File 1874 for delayed over for possible inclusion in the capital investment bill.
Representative Kahn, welcome to the committee. You're using Representative Dabney's vehicle bill.
Yes.
Well, Madam Chair, and members, the spreadsheet and bill are just going out right now.
Yeah.
Representative Kahn,
yes.
Madam Chairman and members,
I'm embarrassed to come before you with such a small bill as opposed to using up all of the bonding capacity. This committee is only asking to use up one-tenth of the bonding capacity. We're also looking at the spreadsheet. We have, and we pretty much followed the governor's recommendations, and I think we had unanimous with a couple of exceptions. I'll go to the little ones first. We put Representative Rood had a veterans memorial in Eden Prairie, which was in the last bonding bill, and so we were particularly sensitive to things that were in the last bonding bill to put them back. Had already been passed by both houses, Capital Investment Committee, so we put that one back in. Then there's a new one, which I'm actually kind of looking and seeing if there's another way to do the bonding for that from the speaker on the orchestra hall pre-design, which is, again, it's the first planning, pre-design and planning money for $3 million.
And what was the alternative?
So the alternative is to do this. I should give Representative Mahoney credit for it, except actually it was initially something that I did about 10 or 20 years ago. So I
totally
forgot. No, but it's very good. I totally forgotten about it, and he's revived it. We take something that has a higher bond, maybe a higher bond, bonding rating, so that it will cost less and it's not up to their bonding capacity, i.e. having the university do the bonding capacity and then having the state make the payments, which are then leveled, so it doesn't interfere with our bonding capacity, and the state makes the payments, guarantees to make the payments, which is another issue, how you keep promises over the future, and so we lower our bonding total and we make lower payments at the same time. And so that's, I think that might be a possibility with some big Minneapolis projects, but I don't know yet. We're looking into what the Minneapolis bonding capacity is, what their credit rating is, which might very well be better than the state's credit rating, and looking at trying to do that same arrangement. And the last time we did it, we was with the city of Minneapolis for parkland, and also for the Target Center. The same thing was for the Target Center, where even though that was being paid by Minneapolis property tax, we had a continuing appropriation that was going. That was going for that. So I don't have an amendment to do it. So we're just looking at that. I just wanted to point out that that's something that we should look at. There was nothing that we wanted to blackball or that was low. Everything seemed really very reasonable in this. The two items which were the high priority because they were the unanimous consent of the committee and specifically totally supported by all the minority members of the committee are the Department of Transportation exterior and the State Capitol building restoration. And we did go above the governor on that second one, and I think part of the language, if you look at the language that accompanies this, one of the things we're really trying to avoid in that Capitol building, we understand there are two things we wish to accomplish in that. We want to seal the building so that there's no more deterioration, so that we really stop water leaking in through the roof and that kind of thing. And we want to keep, and we want to do anything that won't depend on what the final design is, because I know there's a lot of controversy about that. And the second thing we want to do is we want to make sure that everything is done that will be interfered with the LRT construction. We don't want to have to construct that north face. We don't want to work on the north face twice, once before or after a while LRT. We want that totally coordinated with LRT. And so we feel that amount of money is really important to accomplish those two kinds of things. And also getting, that gets all of the support systems like the HVAC and that kind of thing out of the building, and that has to be done no matter what the final design is. And so we it's got to be looked at carefully to see that we're not doing more than we need to do and not doing things that will have to be redone later. And that's, I think, all I have to say.
And members, the Department of Transportation exterior, the trunk highway bonds are in the transportation bill, and should that happen to be acted upon, it's in another bill, but should it not?
I do have a story about this with probably people from the past, one of the historians around here, which, with the danger that those slabs might fall down and the building might not be insured. At one time in mine of my second or third term, so, you know, in the back in the dark ages, when we were, the committee that I, State Government Finance Committee, was hearing problems about the Capitol restoration, the front of the Capitol, and some of the statues that were on the Capitol and so forth, and that they were deteriorating and they really need to be fixed and it was actually a danger. And I think probably not me, but certain members of the committee were sort of jeering at this and saying it wasn't that serious and we really didn't need to do it. And one of those members was Representative Henry Kalis, who some of you may remember. And Representative Kalis had a group of people from his district visiting the Capitol and standing outside. And while they were standing there, an arm from one of the statues fell off and fell down and crashed right next to them. And I tell you, we funded that so fast.
We have lots of questions, Representative Khan. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Khan, I just want to comment that I like the priorities of fixing the MnDOT building and also the fact that you are putting a lot of money into asset preservation at the Capitol and not so much into the pre-design of the future project. I think, as you said, it's very important to take care of the Capitol building and seal it up, and especially this year, I think it's appropriate in the centennial year. And want to express publicly the joy I had in serving on your conference committee last year, the State Government Finance, and certainly available to help you out anytime.
Well, you weren't quite helpful enough at the end, but we did appreciate you.
Representative Carlson.
My question is,
would you prefer the Middle Ages?
how are we defining the North Campus? Some of us have been quite interested in a more comprehensive plan than what has been talked about earlier relative to the complex. So what do you mean when you say that we're writing this history of North Campus?
I think that's what we would like it to go, you know, through the Ford building and through those parking lots around there, but we don't, I think we purposely don't define it. We'd rather have people work on the plan and see what needs to be done. I mean, one of the things, I gather there's no attack to, and if there is, we may have to keep that previous language, which we couldn't put in, which is to say that no one can tear down the Ford building. But we'd like it to include how we're going to use the Ford building, which is something that's connected to our tunnel system.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, as you know, part of the discussion that we had on the capital issue was the needs of the legislature generally, the House as well as the Senate. And when you say North Campus, I'm assuming that does not necessarily include the needs which come forth with the remodeling of the State Capitol complex relative to the State Office building and or other facilities that might be needed. Maybe we should talk as this moves forward about something a little bit broader than just referencing the North Campus.
Okay. You know, we would actually assume that in that that you do that was the problem with the
original design was that it didn't look at the needs of the house at all, and then as soon as you're looking at the needs of the house, you need to look at the state office building. And in fact, it did, by reference, include the state office building because it was moving senators out of the state office building, but any language that we need to make sure that that's covered, any additional language like state office building or something, including, you know, what to go in there.
Further questions? Okay, sure. I made a note. Representative Jackie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, under Military Affairs Asset Preservation, you include St. Cloud and Bemidji roofing projects. I don't believe we saw that, and I see two bills handed in. I assume that's for those two. Did those bills come separately, or did they come as part of the Military Affairs request?
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, they're both. There were two separate bills that we both heard, but talking to the people of Military Affairs, and if they hear, they can clarify that. We've usually not targeted separate projects. We let them go down their list, and they explain that they really go down, and these both fit into their 5 million. That these both fit in on that preference list.
Well, Madam Chair, was part of the 5 million. Was
right.
Those
and those, and so supposedly those could complete. That could completely come out.
Right.
Now, we put a may in, because one of the things they explained in how they
reference the line.
Oh, okay. Page 4, line 4.24. We put a may in because one of the things they explained about how they do this,
okay,
how they do this is that they try and lump projects by area and by the kind of construction so they can get a better price with a, you know, by phasing them in terms of how they're going to do it. So they said that's when they'll go out of their preference line if they can do a better lumping, if they don't have enough money, if they can do a better meshing of projects together so that the whole thing will cost less. So we didn't want to tie them down to doing that, but we did put them in, and I think those specific names could completely come out without any change to the project.
Mr. Mahoney.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Kahn, I've been on the bonding committee, I think, 8 years now, and I've seen this DOT exterior renovation. I can't remember not seeing it. It's $18 million now, or is it $20 million now? And what was it?
15 when I...
what is it? I think it's $18.2 million. Do you have a history on that? What was it?
No,
2 years ago? What was it? 6 years ago?
Let me
represent time.
And has it dramatically changed from 6 or 8 years ago?
Well, it obviously has just by inflation, but do we have...
No, I meant
okay.
the scope of what they were doing, Representative
Kahn.
We don't want to spend a lot of time because, frankly, it is in the transportation bill,
okay,
and we don't know the outcome of the transportation.
It might be passed today. But anyway,
and members, beyond the inflation on this project, I know from the department what they've had to spend just in the interim. This was in our bill last year. It was vetoed, and the department told me how much they have had to spend in the interim just to, maintain the safety of the building.
Madam Chair, clarify my question.
Okay.
To the department, who might know, I would like to know the dollar figure of inflation from when this first came forth about 8 years to today.
If you can
manage my question is kind of, what has inaction costed us, if I said that correctly?
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, Member Nikki Green Cole, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Administration. Representative Point, I don't have that ratcheted up figure for inflation, but I can tell you that the project first came before committees in 2002, and it started off at roughly $5 million, but obviously that wasn't the entire scope of the building. So this number that we're dealing with today obviously includes inflation. What it also includes is... it's as close to a bid as we're going to see. What we actually did is we spent the money this past year to have a general contractor and CPMI, a professional construction estimator, take a look at the numbers that had not been done prior. also we were dealing with just simply architectural engineering type cost estimates up until this point, but this is what we got back. And the scope over the street, we started off with one facade of the side of the building that was on the south side. It's now encompassing the entire building.
And Chair, I won't take up any more time with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, ma'am. Just a comment. We heard again about the potential of bonding for cash flow. And we've spent a lot of time talking about that. I just wonder if it wouldn't be appropriate for the bonding committee to maybe give us the finance committee and set some kind of parameters on what that should be for people who would apply, would know what those parameters are, number one. And number two, one of those parameters should be that those things should have big public buy-in. University, housing, and, you know, some of these things may not have good public buy-in. And so, but I think it would be appropriate for the committee chairs to know that there's some kind of a parameter that guides it like we do bonding.
And Representative Peterson, you're suggesting capital investment jointly with the finance.
And finance come up with some kind of a rule of thumb, a guide, if you please. When do we use that? How often do we use it? Because we're hearing it a lot. Mm-hmm. It's the new mode right now, I think.
So,
university.
And the housing.
Housing. Somebody else is talking.
And
about
the well, the university would be the stadium and the bioscience.
Yeah.
And then housing. So Representative Carlson and I will have a conversation about that. Representative Singlestead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, just real quick. Section 4, Military Affairs. There was a change in the interim with the Vets Home Board. I assume the veteran stuff will be in Representative Junkie still.
Yep.
Thank you.
Representative Wiginia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, you made a historical reference to the Dark Ages, and while I wasn't even thinking about running for the legislature at that at the time you referred to, I do know from a public point of view that was called a renaissance.
That's a good closing comment, I think. I think we have, Representative Lanning has one more question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, did I understand you correctly in saying that your proposal here on the Capitol building restoration does not presume an expansion of the Capitol? Is that what you were saying?
Representative Kahn.
I believe so. Yes, I do. It's really just unless any of that ceiling kind of thing would have something to do with the proposed expansion. I could say that with confidence. I really think it's what I said. Just the ceiling and just the north face. But the question is, you know, it's going to still have to be a dynamic conversation. But the one thing you don't want to do is reconstruct the north face twice.
Right.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. I'd just like to point out that if it does include this, if the $63.9 million does include the vaults on the north side, those vaults, as originally planned, do presume some things about expansion of the building. And if we're going to do the vaults, we need to make sure that we're not presuming more than what the legislature is prepared to do here.
Well, don't know an awful lot about the mechanics of actually doing it, but I do believe those can probably be done in an expandable way. You know, the vault can be, but we have to get the stuff out from the from the basement of the Capitol. You know, we were just horrified at some of the spaces we crawled in when we looked at it, and so we do have to do this. And I just think the question of how much you do and what you need to project that you're going to do for the future is beyond my ability. But we're just hoping that the people will get together before the actual construction takes place. And that it will. But we think that as important as sealing the roof off is getting rid of the stuff that's in the basement. And so hopefully there's some way of doing that the some way of doing that, when you do the initial step, and what you do is depending on what else you're doing.
And Representative Lanning, you may recall seeing, or I don't know if we ever posted it, but we were actually going to talk a little bit about the LRT alignment, because I just finally saw the picture, and there is, in fact, behind the Capitol, a trench. In other words, if you came out the back, pedestrians will not be able to walk across that street because the hill is too high, and they have to bring it down. So I was actually... We may figure out how this committee can it still allows the tunnel underneath to happen. Further questions?
Another thing that could be done with this is what people have suggested is a widening of the tunnel while you're doing that. Well, again, better passage between the university.
Further question, Representative Lanning.
Just a closing comment, Madam Chair. You know, capital restoration is a priority. Before we go down the road of expanding the capital facility, we need a whole lot more planning and agreement than what we have right now.
Thank you. I think that's all the questions. Representative Tamar. Representative Scalzi.
I would move House File 2859 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the final capital investment bill.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Tamar, and I think the your material is being distributed to the committee.
Yeah, but I'm going to go here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be as brief as I can. I'm going to just highlight our bill. We had hearings on all of the proposals, and there are representatives from the Department of Corrections and the Department of Public Safety to, if you have specific questions about these projects, as you can see on the spreadsheet, we basically agreed with the governor's recommendations on the for the Department of Corrections that the Faribault expansion, which is the third phase, be bonded for, as well as the department-wide asset preservation. The one project that we did not feel warranted bonding this year was the perimeter security fence at Shakopee. That did not get recommended by the committee. The other two projects related to the Department of Public Safety is the joint partnership between the military and the state of Minnesota at Camp Ripley, and then the Southeastern Minnesota Regional Public Safety Training Center in Rochester. Those were both recommended by the governor. And
members, tomorrow we are going to have the Department of Public Safety in just to give us the background that your committee received to give us a sense of how you arrived at recommendations.
Ma'am Chair, let me make two more comments. We included all of the, you can see at the bottom of the spreadsheet, we included all of the projects and ranked them in priority, and it was approved by our committee without dissent. This ranking level, they were, many of these are very good projects, and you'll have to make a decision about which one you think should be in the capital investment bill. Let me just draw your attention, if I can, to the rider language that's in the bill, which you might not. If you look at page 3 of the bill, you'll see under Camp Ripley, we added language to the Ripley proposal that basically said that the fees charged to non-military public safety personnel from the state of Minnesota may not exceed the fees charged to military personnel. We were concerned about that, and Mr. Leslie is here from the Department of Public Safety. If you have specific questions about the Ripley proposal or the Olmsted County proposal. Another points on the Scott County Public Training Center facility. We had some concerns that...
In the rider language you're referencing?
I'm sorry, it's line 5.1 through 5.6. Members, I just want to draw your attention to this document here, which you do not have, and maybe you'll have this when you hear from DPS, but this was back in 1999, because we had so many requests from counties and regions all over the state of Minnesota for training facilities, that we asked the Department of Public Safety to put together a statewide master plan to help us decide where training facilities should be located. And this has been a good guide, I think, for our committee. And so it's the rider language that you see on 5.1 to 5.6 helps us in that matter, because there is a facility in Edina, and we wanted to make sure if the Scott County project was funded that it would not be duplicating any training services or facilities that occur in Edina. Let me then go to line 7.1 through 7.3. This deals with the Anoka County project, and this is a concern that I think the committee should be aware of, that if we are going to start funding regional forensic labs, that we want to make sure that the state is not training DCA scientists and then having counties or regional centers hiring them away. So this was some protective language.
Is that really enforceable, that language, 7.1 to 7.3?
It was our best shot.
But, I mean, I understand your concern, and but what would concern me is presumably everyone has free choice and can quit a job and take a new one, but I think maybe you need to talk about the concern you have as other centers are built.
Let me do that, Madam Chair, because that sort of fits into the next two pieces of where we had rider language. That was the Minneapolis project, line 7.8 through 7.12. And then I think the big one here, which I hope will provide guidance to the legislature, is 7.20 through 8.19. As I referenced the statewide master plan for fire and law enforcement training facilities, I also want to reference this report, which we recommended last year, where the Department of Public Safety created a working group over the interim to help think through the possibility of regional forensic crime labs. And what we're and they have done that, and they have stated that there may be a point where regional labs that the board recommends a systematic expansion of regional forensic crime laboratories in the state of Minnesota. If you look at line 7.20 through 8.19, what we have done here with the rider language is we are asking the Department of Public Safety to develop a long-term strategic plan, like they did with the fire and training facilities, to help us think through this issue. I know Representative Tinglestad, I don't know anyone else in this committee, but the Anoka County project is a good project. They have everything that we really want in terms of collaboration and a local match. However, it's a concern that if Anoka does get funded without thinking this through in a more methodical way, that it's going to open the floodgates for other forensic labs in the metropolitan area as well as through the state of Minnesota. We don't think that that's a prudent use of state funds until we actually can figure out the crime rates geographically, where they should be located. Does it make sense for the Anoka County project to be an hour away from the DCA lab in East St. Paul that we spent $70 million for a few years ago, and still have capacity? And I mean, part of the problem here, I think you probably have heard in your tours, is the time it takes to get DNA evidence processed. Part of that is our fault and the governor's fault for not providing enough scientists to the BCA. But this, I think, is this rider language, if you approve this, I think will give the Department of Public Safety the opportunity to really look at the statewide needs and give us a guidepost. And Commissioner Campion is here if you have any questions of him specifically.
And Representative Tamar and I have had a conversation about this in preparation for today, and one of the things I shared with him is as we were touring, what we did here is other centers, and I recall specifically Minneapolis, saying we're really 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, as we generate our work output, and that wasn't available to them. And the other issue that we heard was prioritization, that if they sent a very high-profile crime, they couldn't be assured that it would go to the top of the list, that it might be behind other priorities. And I think those would be two that, and I don't know if you're, is he part of tomorrow's hearing?
Madam Chair, I don't believe that is true. I do believe the BCA prioritizes those cases. I do believe that they are open 24/7. There may, but I'll let the person who really knows.
Mr. Campion.
Good afternoon, Matt, or good morning, Madam Chair. Michael Campion, the Commissioner of Public Safety. There was a question someplace I may have missed.
Well, in relation to the discussion we're having here, Representative Tamar and I have talked about this. The two things that we heard on our tours of other centers were that they believed their centers would be open 24/7. They believed that was not the case at BCA. They further didn't have clarity whether if they had a very high-profile crime, would that be prioritized to the top of the list, or would it go? Does it go to the bottom of the list? And those were all arguments they were making about why we build more centers.
To the issue of prioritizing cases, Madam Chair and members, certainly cases are prioritized. Sexual assault, homicide cases are prioritized. I think the Drew shooting evidence was analyzed in 7 days, maybe 5 days. Obviously, there was a set of exigent circumstances regarding that case, so that's just illustrative of the kind of prioritization that takes place. When you say the second question being, are they? I assume you're talking about shift work being open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There is not shift work being done at the BCA in St. Paul or Bemidji now. That is a possibility at some point in the future. There's a capacity available for some 25 additional scientists between those two locations before a decision would be made to go to work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. I hope that answers your question, Madam Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, if I might make a suggestion to the Chair of the Public Safety Committee, you tried to limit the ability for hiring one scientist away from one and going to the other, and you might take that incentive away simply by requiring any forensic lab with state bonding money to have to go underneath the guidelines of, I think it's the governor's pay is 90% of the governor's pay or something like that, which would mean that they could work at a facility of with 200 or 300 square feet, 1,000 square feet, and 20 other scientists or 30 other scientists, or just one small facility, whether it's a small county or a large county. But that would certainly take care of it, and I think you would have a lot less trouble with lawyers going into court challenging you.
Representative Virginia?
Yes, thank you. As I listen to your response to Representative Hausman about perhaps going to shift work and going to shift work in the future, implicit in your statement is, well, we're not even sure that's necessary. So are you saying to us that Minneapolis has taken the wrong tactic to be open 24 hours every day?
Madam Chair, Representative, no. That's not what I said. That's not what I meant to say or imply.
Representative Senior, do you think that is the right thing for them to do? Mr. Campion.
Madam Chair, I think they're professional enough to make their own decision. If that's the route they choose to make and choose to embark on, I suspect it is a good decision for them to make.
I'd like to follow up.
Professor Guinea.
Well,
the question here, the more basic question, is if you don't, if you're just saying, well, that's their decision, I may make another decision, then it is seeming to me that you're saying, when we go, when we look at this suggestion that Representative Paymar made, which I think is a good one, and I like it, that 24 hours feels like it's being dismissed out of hand, and that that isn't particularly important. So if we're going to wait for a long time to find out that no, Minneapolis will serve Minneapolis better by being 24 hours and you're not going to step up to the plate, that's troubling to me.
Madam Chair,
Captain?
Representative, that's not what I meant at all. It's a very complicated issue, Representative. Whether you have multiple scientists working in the same area, for instance, there are contamination considerations. There's any number of different other professional considerations. I don't know specifically what Minneapolis' physical site looks like. There is a number of other considerations. I think the BCA, Department of Public Safety, both in Bemidji and St. Paul, if at capacity and there was a need for additional forensic science response, would go to 24 hours a day or 7 days a week or some modification of that. I certainly, Madam Chair, I'm not trying to imply that that's not a good route to take. There are just other considerations that it's just not as simple as to say we should just need to go, three shifts. I mean, maybe there are points in between the two, if that helps at all.
There may be points in between the two, but the question I'm listening, or the answer I'm listening for, are you going to step up to the plate and meet the need? And that's not what I'm hearing.
Mr. Campion or Representative Paymar?
Madam Chair, I think that the BCA has tried to do that. We've paid the overtime. We've maximized the amount of scientists that are working there to get the most work out of them. There are a number of professional business decisions or policies that need to be continually examined to make the best use of forensic science examinations that do come in. It's a very, very complicated issue, Madam Chair and Board members. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week is only one option in a wide range of several options to address forensic science examination needs.
It's not so much the process I'm interested in, it's the outcome. It is, will we get really quick information for everybody around the state? And that's what seems to be lacking right now. That's why other people are proposing to do their own thing.
And Representative Paymar, I think your issue always was, are we in fact properly funding the center that we have already built with state money, and should we be fully maximizing that resource? So is it operations dollars that we perhaps are lacking? I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I think I've heard you.
Well, Madam Chair, that is part of the problem. I think we gave them 15 scientists last year, but they could have used twice as many. And the whole science with is changing so dramatically that we just have to get our arms around this. I understand why people are coming in and saying they want their own labs, but. If we don't do this in a systematic way, I think it's going to cost the state taxpayers more money unnecessarily more money in the future. And I trust that they can figure this out. And they made a first attempt at it during the interim, and now we're giving them direction. And I think they'll come back to the legislature next year with a good plan.
Mr. Campion, I don't know if you might be available during our committee time tomorrow, and Representative Tamar, the two reports that you referenced, if you could make sure that staff know that we have those available for tomorrow. Because I know your committee did good work and you had unanimous approval to your priorities and recommendations, we want to understand what is the governor's proposal around Camp Ripley, which I think you agree with and have included that in your bill, and further that you are trying to reflect what's coming out of those reports that have been done. And so we just want to understand the background behind your recommendations so that we're making good decisions around them. Representative Singleton?
Thank you, Mr. Madam Chair, and Representative Tamar, I appreciate your patience as we have been looking at these various regional facilities around the state. You've been very kind with my project. Thank you. I'm looking at page 2, and under subdivision 3 there, the, lines 4 through 16. So you list those projects, and then there's follow-through language with the rest of the bill. My question to you is, how many of those projects have some matching local funds?
Madam Chair, Representative Singlestat, obviously priority number one, which was the Red Wing proposal, I don't believe that has any of that local money. But all of the rest of the projects have at least 50% matching funds.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we have answered all questions, and thank you, Mr. Campion, for coming forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Tamar.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Junkie, if you can manage yours in about 5 minutes, I think the information is going out. Representative Scalzi.
Madam Chair,
I move
House File 2791 for possible inclusion.
Junkie moved. 2791.
And members, I'll just briefly give you some notes. Our committee moved all the bills forward without prioritization. That was a committee decision, and we thought they all had merit and that we'd sort through them once we got up here. I will make some notes, though. There was nothing for agriculture, although it was inkled early there may be a roof in East Grand Forks, but that never came forward. So it's really all veterans, Department of Veterans Affairs. As far as the asset preservation, I do have a report on my desk from the deputy commissioner on what our health and safety items in there, so I will bring that as we put the bill together so we understand what part of that is prioritized. We do have a priority on that. I just haven't got the number added up yet. As you go down, you see a number of projects. I would make a note, again, Veterans Affairs is different in the way we fund things in that roughly two-thirds of the building projects are funded, two-thirds of the costs are funded by the federal government, one-third is a state match, and then when we operate them, it's about a 50-50, state and federal. So as you look down, but you see they're not uniform as we go down. In fact, I will reference Fergus Falls, the 9.9, Hastings, the 7 million, and Minneapolis, the 26 million, are all asking for 100% of the money up front, and then will be reimbursed later. The Wilmer project, the 8 million, is a one-third request, and then they go get the money, which is probably the way we should be doing this. If you're going to do 100%, the problem is, as you know, we bond for it then, is what this is asking for, geo bonds, but and then, say, a year from now, the federal government sends us a check for their two-thirds. We've already burned the bonds and the bonding authority. So technically, I think from the governor's standpoint, finance standpoint, as well as this committee, if you're going to do 100%, you should be looking at cash for the two-thirds. So when the check comes back, it goes into the general fund and it's reimbursed as cash versus cash. So I think that's problematic in a number of these bills that came forward that our committee will have to have a decision on. I'll also tell you that the Hastings supportive housing is not eligible for any federal money at this point either. And that committee was down there. I know we heard that in the presentation. You can see a number of these bills had no agency bills come forward, so we just simply took the governor's spreadsheet, but no agency bills were introduced. In fact, we're still waiting for an agency bill on their supplemental Veterans Affairs request, which we haven't seen yet either. Other than what's on this list, there is a request for Montevideo, but not for building, but they will be looking at operations if that project would move forward, and we would have to have a say on that. There's a number of smaller, I would point out also the Silver Bay, the 227, I think is critical, because that's actually an old project, and there was a cost increase, and we still owe a third, and that 227 is the third requirement for the state. So I think that one is just, that's something that's already in process. The rest of that was a new project. And again, a lot of these facilities and buildings, we need to go back and do some planning and some reevaluation. Silver Bay is a case where our waiting lists are running less and less, and you know, we're worried there may be open beds there in the near future. So it was placed there late in a conference committee many years ago is how that one got built, and I don't know if that was the best location or not at the time, but certainly that was another legislature that did it. We're trying to be more strategic in our committee over the next few years on where we're locating these and for what reason and for what services. So we'll continue to work, and I certainly can advise the committee on what we talked about. And, of course, we saw all these projects, members. For those that were out on tour, we were in literally every one of these projects that came from the agency.
Questions? Well, you were obviously very complete. Members, the last three we're going to have to hold over until this evening. They are a little longer, and I don't think we could manage them. So we are going to be in recess until 6 p.m. Back here in the basement hearing room. Sorry about that, but the last three bills we'll do this evening in this room. Committee is in recess. We don't quite have a quorum, and so we won't move bills, but we don't need a quorum because that's right. We're just in recess. I forgot. This isn't a new meeting. Representative Leader moves House File 380. And members, we have, again, the information before us, spreadsheet and language.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, House File 380 deals with the transportation items. We went through it in Transportation Committee. We didn't put a high, low, or medium on it because they're basically, we thought that the committee would decide, because some of them have match monies as far as federal goes, and some of them, like the UPA, is definitely a match money, and that's kind of a fixed number. And that's pretty much true with most of the, and the rest of them are corridors, Madam Chair.
And obviously, Representative Leader, these are probably far higher numbers than we're going to be considering.
That's correct.
So, but you're bringing forward what you heard in your committee.
That's right.
Thank you. So those are not prioritized, just carried forward as he heard them. And any questions? If not, we're...
Madam Chair?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Leader, I just wanted to make sure that I made a joke to a couple of my compatriots a couple of days ago that I had gotten a marker in the transportation bill. It was the 494-35W interchange for $1 billion. And they believed me for a while. I had to correct them. So I just wanted to make sure it wasn't in here.
That's not
a
bad...
I did. I will tell you that when I presented, I did reference for Representative Lucheski the 494 corridor study, and it is in here, but as you can see, it's not... it's $500,000. Thank you.
Unless there are any questions.
No further questions. I think Representative Leader can take a bit of a breather.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Rukadina? Representative Rukadina moves House File 2659. be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm just sorry. Madam Chair and members, first of all, let me publicly apologize to you for the mess that I sent you, but you know, I think my committee administrator figured we probably had between 50 and 60% of all the bonding bills in our committee. In fact, I had 62 bills referred to the committee on Friday, February 15th, 36 more on the 19th, and we were trying to meet your deadline. So we did hear 107 bills over 5 regular meetings and 2 night meetings. And then, Madam Chair, I just decided I was going to pass everything on to our bonding committee here and make those decisions. In the bill, though, is the prioritized list of the University of Minnesota and MinSU and the PFA. Madam Chair, I would be remiss if I didn't compliment you and many of your members, including Representative Carlson and Junkie, for being at all of the site visits that you worked so hard on this summer and fall and winter. And so you've seen a lot of these. There are also a lot of newly introduced bills that I've passed on that are also very important to local communities, and those people have put in a lot of work too. So and Madam Chair, I visited a lot of the MinSU and university places twice with your committee and then on my own also. I might have to add that. Amendments that are included in the bill are the university's bioscience proposal. It's a great project. It needs to move forward. The committee was concerned about the 80-20 instead of the two-thirds, one-third that in all of the other required matches for the university and the MinSU system. So that recommendation is in there. And the governor's seed proposal, we put a new program in there that's looking at a program that was similar to what Governor Perpich did to jumpstart our economy back in the 80s when it was in this bad shape, and that is a Minnesota biofuels program. And other than that, Madam Chair, other than the fact that I passed you a bill that basically eats up your entire budget, that's the extent of the bill, and I think we have all the bills listed in the finance sheet here by division, and so I stand for any questions.
And Representative Rukavina, you do have the portion of the bill that is traditionally the biggest part of the bill, which is higher education. And so that isn't a surprise, I think, for us that there would be such significant interest.
And then, Madam Chair, I have all the local grants because of BEAD also.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at, you know, the grants from political subdivisions, it's over about two pages.
That's the part that is, so as we traveled the state, I can recall one town saying to us when we said we were going to come visit that they felt like they won the lottery because we were coming to visit, and I think we so often don't understand the importance of our partnership with towns around the state and their desire for us to partner with some of the local economic development efforts.
Madam Chair, just a couple quick things, too, on the Public Finance Authority. If you've noticed, we have all the bills listed that are actually would make the cut. And I believe, I don't know if Tim is here, I think Tim's around here somewhere. Where is Tim?
Over.
But I believe that the ones that are listed at MPSA, is that at the governor's proposal or with our?
All of them are listed. All five are listed.
Okay. And also, I do want to comment, members, of having traveled the state and looking at a lot of the different facilities in the MinSU system, that there is a huge difference
like, you know, in the system, there's like two different Minnesotas out there when it comes to some of the facilities that are owned by the state of Minnesota. So, you know, something eventually I think has to be done with this funding formula as far as the one-third that is required on both the university and the MNSU that gets passed on to the students, because some of those facilities just do not have the economies of scale to raise that kind of money. So, but we didn't do anything on that. I didn't want to get Representative Mahoney mad at me.
Lots of wastewater infrastructure.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
So thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina.
Your amendments in the bill.
I wasn't about to suggest that it wasn't. I was just going to commend you on the fine work they did in, you know, traveling around the summer, really making yourself aware of the projects that are out there. And as you already indicated, there are some very fine projects in here that certainly should be funded.
Madam Chair, I would say to Representative Erdahl and Representative Dunkey that there was an amendment added that was actually suggested by Mr. Coleman from Deed regarding their two communities of Litchfield and I think Wilmer, because of the caps that are placed, and they just don't have the property wealth to do it. Special compensations in the past for that.
I was thinking you had said there are three that Terry Coleman had suggested that it might be appropriate for caps to be lifted.
Two that I know of, but it's Mr. Coleman. Was there another third community? I don't recall. I think there were just two in that amendment.
Okay. Representative Lanning has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, if I heard you correctly, you said that both for the university and MNSU, the projects are listed in priority order. And my question is that the same priority as MNSU and the university have determined,
yes,
or is it have you reorganized
no.
the priorities?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, we didn't reorganize anything. We went with their recommendations. This committee is going to have to make a tough decision about how much we end up putting and where we reach and how far down we reach with both of them. You know, the governor's recommendations were different. So, and we also have the bioscience proposal that came in late, although that doesn't cost any money on your target this biennium, from what I understand.
Representative Lanning, did you have further questions?
No, that answered my question. Thank you.
I think we have no further questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
It'll take us a little while to read this, so. And last one, Representative Lugunius. Representative Lugunius moves House File 2957 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Oh, members, while she's coming up, Representative Dunkey asked a question about the housing project. And so we have in your packet a map of the state, a list of all of the properties around the state, and then specific veterans and families and individuals and youth projects. And the one other, which my understanding is that Representative Clark said of the last bonding project, there were eight, and four were in the metro and four were in greater Minnesota. So that gives you, hopefully, an answer to the question. Representative Virginia.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. I know Representative Rukavina had the most money. I'm thinking that we may have had the most bills to hear. We heard approximately 100 and thought it was best to give you all not just a list, but to actually try to do a balanced bill. And that's what we did. We tried to be fair and balanced across the state. Very difficult when traditionally most of the environmental and natural resources money has been spent outstate. And indeed, in this our proposal, most of it is spent outstate. We tried to be fair to the metropolitan area.
The second thing, we had some principles. Our second principle was to create as many jobs as possible, as soon as possible with this money. And so what you see here is a little bit different than previous years. We have less purchases of interest in land. We are doing more to start to clear away asset preservation backlog. And we're doing a lot more restoration than we have done in the past, because all of that is job creation, and some of it can get on the ground very, very quickly. The third principle we used was that one piece of money should buy more than one value. Traditionally in this area, we kind of tended to work in silos, so one piece of money would buy just flood mitigation, or another piece of money would just buy a wildlife management area. We have tried to make it so that $1 would buy at least several values, and so that was the other thing that we worked on. You all have a list, so I won't go over the list. I'm just going to tell you some of the things that maybe I want to highlight for you. I could certainly go over the list, but what I'm hearing is move back. Okay. A lot of the things that we did in DNR are very traditional: flood mitigation, dam removal, those kinds of things. I'm going to start with the first untraditional one, which would be on page 6, and that's groundwater monitoring wells. And what we have heard, and this is a proposal from DNR and the governor's recommendation, to start to install monitoring wells in the Mount Simon Aquifer, which underlies the metropolitan area and goes to the south. It was a proposal for $1 million, and so I asked the question, what do we really need? There are 67 wells now in this aquifer. DNR believes we should have 600 more. And the money that was requested buys about wells at about 15 to 25 locations. So you can see there's a lot of work to be done. So one of the things we've proposed in this bill is to have the users of this water pay for part of the water wells, because it's monitoring their own drinking water to see if they're going to have enough drinking water. And that is a little bit different in this bill, and you'll see it in the back in the language. And what we're calling for is a .00, that's three O's, and a 2 cents per gallon applied to the volume of groundwater used in these counties that sit over the Mount Simon Aquifer, which is a very deep aquifer, and wells are very expensive. So that's one difference that I wanted to point out to you. Just because in the long run, we're going to need to invest about $120 million in wells just to know what our drinking water situation is. It's huge. We haven't been doing it. The second thing I would like to point out is when I said we were going to use the dollar to buy more than one thing, we applied that on page 9 to the wildlife area acquisition improvement. And these are WMAs that we have traditionally purchased, but this time we're saying that restore them with quality so that you can hunt them and you have good habitat, but also for DNR to bring back a plan to us about harvesting that cellulose in late fall so that we can encourage our biofuel industry. I mean, people were saying we need this biofuel stuff. This is probably the fastest way to get it, except for the proposal that Representative Hansen is making. So we're also going to go back and say these areas, DNR, give us a proposal to make these areas available for harvesting. That's a difference than it's been done in the past. Okay, in the parks area, I have handed out in your packets this list, And we know that parks have been the most underfunded, parks and trails have been the most underfunded portion of DNR's budget for years. And this is a list of their backlog of deferred maintenance. And then you, if you go back toward the end of this list, it is new stuff. And you can see the ends for new. And what we did in this proposal is just reference this because it is so fairly done around the state. There are deferred maintenance projects all over the state. There are new projects all over the state. It adds up to $20 million. It fits in with the parks plan, DNR's plan to spend $10 million a year to bring our parks back up to snuff. And that's a 10-year plan. So balancing that out, we did recommend purchasing the Vermilion site. We got a figure from DNR at 17.5, which I think is less than some folks anticipated, but that is enough to purchase the land and to do some minimal improvements like for camping and that kind of thing. So we were balancing the new park with the old parks for trying to do the balance there. We have a number of regional parks that we are recommending on page 13 and 14, and then there's a state trails acquisition list, which you will see is much easier to see on this sheet right here. And Representative Mull pulled that one together, and I expected him down here, so I hope he comes if there are questions. So then I want to get,
and I may have misled him. I told him you were last on the agenda, and he probably didn't realize how quickly we'd be moving here.
Okay. All right. That may be the issue. So we get down to trails. We have a disease, shade tree removal. We're looking at invasive issues here. This is for statewide. It's not for any particular area. And then we get to the Pollution Control Agency. And I want to mention here that at the chair's request some time back, Chair Hausman asked us to look at the state of sewage today. Are there new things going on? Are there things we should be thinking about? Because we seem to be operating as if it were 1970. And we had several hearings, but got very little from the Pollution Control Agency on that subject. However, the University of Minnesota was marvelous, and they taught us about the beneficial reuse of wastewater. And many states are doing it, including North Dakota, which just surprised me to tell you guys that they are having, Fargo has arranged with an ethanol plant to sell its wastewater to an ethanol plant, good for Fargo. What's even worse is that the firm, the architectural engineering firm that is doing it, actually has an office in Circuit Falls. So we are proposing some demonstration of beneficial reuse of wastewater for use in industry, including ethanol. So that's a bonding proposal. The other thing, probably the most problematic issue in this bill is the landfill program. Washington County landfill needs to be redone because of all of the PFCs found leaking into the groundwater. We have not gotten the figures we need at this point to make recommendations to you. We are holding a hearing tomorrow specifically on that. Just to give you an idea of the disparity of numbers, PCA gave us the number of $24 million to redo that landfill, which was supposed to be cleaned up, but needs to be redone now that the PFCs have been discovered, and maybe some other reasons too, but I think that's what prompted it. The community wants to be just a liner, move the stuff, put it on a liner. The community says, no, move it away, but the numbers we're getting just to truck it away come in at $140 million or maybe $190 million. So we cannot make a real proposal to you without getting some better numbers from PCA.
And you're having a hearing on this tomorrow morning
at 8 o'clock committee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we have invited the community to come in, we've invited PCA to come in, and we let 3M know that we were having a hearing and that they were welcome to testify too. So with that, I'm going to switch gears and let Representative Hansen talk about the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Representative Colbert has a question.
Just one quick thing on page 31, when you referenced the 0.0002 cents per gallon. Do you have a fiscal note on how much that raises?
Yes, that would raise it was $1 million request, so we put 750 in. That would be 250 million a year ongoing, because we need wells, and you know, we need 600 wells, and we have 67.
But the intent of is to collect that. Evidently, that must not go for additional wells, however. It must go for the administration of the monitoring.
Oh, no, it's for additional wells.
Okay, very fine. Thank you.
No, the need out there, just for this one aquifer, which is our biggest and our best drinking water aquifer, mm-hmm. we have 67 wells now. We should have 600. So, and the proposal with $1 million is about 50 nested wells at 15 to 25 locations.
Professor Rudolph, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was referencing what Representative Solberg was asking about, who pays that money?
The people who drink the water.
So homeowners.
It would be not necessary. No, it would probably be either a city or a industry that is using that particular aquifer to pay for it.
Okay, so the city would be paying a fee.
So they know whether they have enough water to last them or as they're using it up. There are real questions about the Mount Simon Hinckley
okay.
in some places.
Madam Chair, well, I had a couple other questions I might as well do right now then. One wasn't a question but a comment. On page 12 you had a reference to a Greenleaf Lake State Recreation Area. I just wanted to mention that and say thank you for that. And on page 17, the stabilization of its Fort Snelling Upper Bluff.
Yes.
What is that?
That is essentially the water does not leak into those old buildings there, because it's water that has essentially gone through those buildings and at least collapsed one that we've seen.
Okay. Madam
it's
Chair.
Roots and, you know, putting plywood over windows.
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. We also, in the Heritage Committee, heard that too, and I think perhaps we have money for that in that bill as well, but we'll...
It's a different thing.
A different thing?
Yes.
Okay.
This
all
is
right.
Just stabilization money, that's all it is.
Further, that's a representative.
Just to clarify that, I think the ones that are in this bill are actually, those buildings are owned by the DNR and not by the Historical Society, although they're right alongside of each other.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative House.
Representative Solberg is very close. They're owned by the federal government and managed by the DNR.
By the DNR. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 19, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, all the bills relating to Board of Water and Soil Resources requests were referred to my subcommittee, and we heard the bills and assembled a bill with the recommendations that was passed to Representative Wagenius' committee. We asked for a total of $48 million. What we're trying to do here, the bulk of that is the RIM Reserve Program, and there is some urgency with this request. We are attempting to capture some federal dollars that are out there. We had testimony from the Natural Resources Conservation Service that we could capture $1.4 to every dollar we spend in RIM. And but there's a time limit on that. The money is there with the temporary extension of the Farm Bill, which is extended until March 15th.
And to give us a sense of when that would be, let's just assume we fully funded your bill at your request. What would the matching federal money be?
It originally was, let me just go through the RIM dollars there. We have $42 million for a regular RIM, but we're allowing up to 10% for technical assistance and coming out of the general obligation bond. The Board of Water and Soil Resources traditionally has had their technical assistance come out of the general obligation bond. However, the governor's request was to have it come from general fund. So we're taking out of the GO bond. So you start reducing the total amount there, which takes this 10% technical assistance out. And then we take out $2.4 million for the seven-county flood disaster area. We had testimony that the million that we provided in the special session and $1.1 million that were reallocated within Bowser have been allocated, and there's $2.4 million of documented demand in the seven-county flood area. So you start taking away the $4.2 million and $2.4. We're taking $6.6 away from the $42 million. We're in the mid-30s there. There was originally $60 million that are available. Since we've been moving through this, some of the other states have started to see that, and it's now down to $48 million was the email that I had recently received. So the longer we go, the less potential there is there for capturing that.
And how much of that $48 million, you aren't assuming we could actually match all of it? All 48?
No, I'm dealing with just the regular RIM. We have about $4 million. That is how the 48 from the federal government. We could capture that if we gave the full 36, if we could grab
36 would match 48.
Right.
36 state would match 48 federal.
I'm not able to think of a 1.4 multiplier right off the top of my head, but I think we're pretty close there. Take 36 times 1.4.
No.
We also provide that with some rider language that we would be able to. Right now, Bowser has a 3-year management process where you could burn the rim acres as part of management. We're clarifying that you could harvest rim acres for biofuel development, so that could kickstart the biofuel harvest right now. We're putting a rider on for existing RIM language, RIM acres, and then for new RIM acres that would come in under this. I want to clarify that the money that we're talking about, the federal, is Wetland Reserve Program, WRP money. So it's RIM money matching federal WRP money. In addition, we have an independent analysis from NRCS on the economic multiplier. Representative Wagenius talked about jobs. And for every dollar we spend in those wetland restorations, we can generate $1.56 in economic impact. The people who are doing the seeding, they're breaking the tile, they're grading the structure. There would be jobs that would be starting right away this summer. And that's something we felt was important. We could get the federal dollars, we can get jobs created, we can help with biofuels. There's a flooding component here as well that I think we can clarify a little more. In some of these areas, and then also meeting that need in the seven-county area where there was already the flooding. Elsewhere in Bowser, we provide $4.575 million for a wetland replacement. With the transportation bill that's passed, there will be road construction and bridge construction, so there are going to need to be wetland mitigation efforts, and we provide money in there for those wetland mitigation efforts, and that will particularly be up in the northern area. If there's some road and bridge construction. We also have a clean water legacy component, $1.425 million. That's for water quality programs like Representative Junkie's Grass Lake program, the Lake Kitimat watershed program, and the Lower Minnesota Watershed District.
Representative Riccovino, was yours any part of this? Yours is something else?
Abstract.
Abstract?
For the bill.
you can ask it now. I mean, I don't think you mind when they talk it.
I'm sure. I'll wait until they're done.
Okay. All right.
Well, the wetland reserve is an example of $1 accomplishing
maybe a half dozen different things. And you didn't list those half dozen. Do you want to list them?
Wildlife habitat, flood protection, biofuel potential, carbon sequestration, erosion control, water quality benefits, and attracting federal health.
Okay. With that, I will now say we put some money in for the Metropolitan Council for the parks there, and you'll see that starting on page 23, and some local metro park projects. So that ends our presentation, but if you all have specific questions, particularly on the trails, which I just glossed over, Representative Moll can answer anything on that.
We just referenced trails, anything in particular.
I'll be very brief. Our trail selection was based on we wanted to make some geographic parity. Wanted to make sure, as you've asked, that the projects that we recommend are ready to go now. That these are going to create jobs this year, and we did that. And we also wanted to make sure we leveraged as much other money as possible. So there's every single project has local match, and several have federal matches as well.
Okay.
But I'd be glad to answer any specific questions.
To that last point, do we have a list of those particular trails that have the federal match in place?
Madam Chair, Representative Silvers, we can get that because we have that information on each specific trail, but we haven't put that in the list.
No. Okay, thank you.
We'll distribute that to the committee. Anything further before we go to questions? Representative Riccovina.
Madam Chair, I noticed in the bill, and I don't know if this is for Representative Wagenius or for the DNR, but there's about not counting the proposed addition to the Sedan State Park up there. There's $22 million in acquisition. And I'm just wondering how the DNR can sustain this increase when they can't take care of what they have now. So it's pretty easy to buy something, but to take care of it is a whole different plan. So maybe Mr. Myers or somebody can come down and tell us where the revenue is going to come from to take care of all this land. With the state park, it's $39.5 million.
And I think Representative Wagenius has an observation about that, too.
Now, for the state park list that we gave you, that is not for, that is deferred maintenance and...
No, I didn't add, Madam Chair. Representative Wagenius, I look at Shoreline, an aquatic habitat acquisition for $1 million, and SNA acquisition for $1 million, and wildlife area acquisition for $14 million, and... Big Bot, State Recreation Area for 1.6.
Okay.
State Trail Acquisition. They can't, for 13.5, and they can't take care of what they have now. So, you know, I guess my question is, how is the DNR proposing to take care of another $22 million, not counting the Sedan Edition, when they can't take care of what they have now?
I think that is a good question.
Are we counting on the 3/8 passing? Because I don't... know if that's going to happen. So,
we did put in here...
Cuddle up to me. I need support here.
Okay. We did put in $4 million for trail restoration because there is a backlog there. I totally agree, and I think we had good testimony from folks, particularly up north, where they were saying the tourists are complaining. So we did... fully fund that part of what DNR asked for. But with that, I think maybe you do need to see a Mr. Meyer. Did you hear the question? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, Representative Riccovina, just to be clear, Representative Wagenius covered it. The state park dollars under lines 34 and 35 on the spreadsheet are for rehabilitation and repair only. There is no acquisition there.
I didn't count.
Representative Riccovina, your other acquisition questions you talked about are wildlife management area acquisitions, aquatic management area acquisitions, scientific and natural area acquisitions. There are some management dollars within the bill as well to allow us to do the restoration. These lands aren't like this. There are no buildings on these lands. These are hunting lands. They're natural and rare lands, the scientific and natural areas, lands that we need to protect that are one of a kind often, rare ecotypes that are out there. the other acquisitions, the water access and acquisition, there's $650,000 in that. That would be basically for a couple fishing piers and doing some boat ramp work. So our acquisition dollars, so Representative Rukavina, you're probably right, our $22 million there, they are lands. It's land acquisitions. It's not building and maintenance. These are the lands that people are hiking on, are hunting on, are exploring and learning about our state's natural resources. The maintenance dollars that are there are for parking lots, are for signage, things of that nature. So I hope that answers the questions that are there.
Well, it doesn't answer too well. One last question I'll answer because I know you want to get out of here. But Mr. Myers, are there a couple different formulas for and work entities for payment in lieu of tax dollars for these acquisitions? Are there one blanket tilt payment, or are there different formulas?
Madam Chair, members, there are many different formulas for tilt payments. The tilt payments for WMA lands, for example, are higher. Tilt payments for DNR acquired lands are different. It's something we could spend a whole committee hearing on talking about payment in lieu of taxes, but the acquired lands are higher than other tilt payments that are out there right now.
Okay, one final question on the Vermilion acquisition. Will the tilt payments there be the equivalent of a tilt payment in on the Mississippi in Minneapolis or St. Paul?
Madam Chair, Representative Rubin, the tilt payments associated with the Lake Vermilion State Park project would be as they are for any other park land, Itasca State Park, Teddy Goose.
That's not what I asked. I said, will it be the same tilt reimbursement as if we buy a chunk on the Great River Park or something?
Madam Chair, Representative Rubin, we do not pay tilt on those areas. Those are lands that are owned by the Metropolitan.
Let me frame this another way. You do pay tilt in the Minneapolis and St. Paul on some lands, right? Will the reimbursement rate be the same for the metro area?
We don't own acquired lands in the metropolitan area. The closest would be some WMA lands that we have in like Hastings and Stillwater and places like that. Fort Snelling State Park. I can check on what the tilt payment was. I'm assuming the tilt payment on Fort Snelling State Park per acre would be the same as the tilt payment for Lake Vermilion State Park.
No, Madam Chair and members, the reason I'm asking is because my understanding is if there were cabins or just for the land bought there, it would be about $1 million difference between what the local taxes would be versus what the payment in lieu of taxes are going to be annually. So, and I know there's different formulas, reimbursement formulas for PILT, and I was just wondering if we were getting, because it's pretty valuable land. So that's what I was
saying. This is an issue that our Citizens Advisory Task Force did discuss. There is some documentation on that. I could provide that to the committee and to Representative Rukavina if you so desire, dealing with the PILT issue on those.
Please. Okay. No other questions? Representative Lanning?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Wagenius, I'd like to ask you about the flood hazard mitigation grants, line 10 of your spreadsheet here. Both you and I in the committee, when you heard a number of these bills, indicated that the governor's proposal was inadequate. And I was very surprised to see that you only went to 16 over the governor's 15. And when you look at the flood mitigation work that's still needed up in northwest Minnesota, we're still trying to recover from the 97 flood. And the state stepped forward and did a great job of providing very strong support for southeast Minnesota last fall. So frankly, I'm disappointed that there isn't more funding that you're recommending here. Do you have response to that?
I'll start with that. As
we said, we wanted to make $1 work in many different ways, and you will see the RIM wetland money targeted to flooded areas, so that we do not just the diking, but we do the holding, if you will, the holding ponds, the wetlands.
Rick Pepagenius, can you reference where in the bill the language would be?
Well, we have talked to various folks about this, and they would like to see additional language in here specifically stating that RIM money would be targeted, at least a good portion of it, targeted to flooded areas. So we are making...
Over and above the 16.
Yes, it's totally separate from the 16. I think we are trying to do the balance again, if you will, of the building dike and the prevention side. And so using one piece of money in the RIM to do another job.
Well, Madam Chair, I certainly support efforts like you're describing here. Unfortunately, I don't see those things necessarily having a significant impact on the ongoing flooding problems that Roseau, Crookston, Oakport Township, and places like that are experiencing. So I'm glad to hear that you're thinking in that way, but my point is that I don't think that in and of itself is going to do the job here that we need to do.
Representative Hansen, I think, wanted to speak to that too.
Representative Lanning, I think as we've toured around the state, we've seen that dealing with some upstream wetland restoration can help reduce some of the flooding impacts. And we realize in the Red River Valley that with the flat terrain, it's a little harder than, say, in Maurer County,
right,
with Austin. And we are going to be working on some additional language in the bill as it is written. You see that set out for the southeast seven counties. And we look at doing a similar thing to reach into some of the other flooded areas around the state. And I think that...
So we have more language coming yet on that in terms of targeted dollars in other parts of the bill. So maybe it would be helpful just to sit down with Representative Lanning when you're working.
Madam Chair, a couple of more follow-ups, if I might. I understand the line right below it, the $12 million for Crookston flood mitigation, is in fact the movement of their hockey facility, and I know that's an important thing that needs to be done, but they also have a lot of flood mitigation work that's needed, and I take it that's not included here. Is that correct?
This, as I understand, is the first step.
Well, I just want to call this to the committee's attention. I'm going to be wanting us to take a closer look at this as we move forward. My last question, Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius, on the second page, the closed landfill program,
mm-hmm.
I see that there's a $9 million recommendation there. My question is, did any of that go to clean up privately owned landfills?
Representative Wagenius. And that would be line 85 on the spreadsheet?
Correct.
When the original landfill cleanup bill was passed in the mid-90s, there was $90 million set aside for bonding. It was very controversial at the time because the question out there was, should people in the future pay for messes that were made in the past? So there were three pots of money to deal with the landfill cleanup. One pot was bonding, 90 was the max. The second pot was a waste fee that you pay, the industry and we pay on our garbage. Industry was pleased to pay those fees and raise them because they were the biggest beneficiary of the landfill cleanup bill. We got rid of all the lawsuits, probably saved them about $400 million minimum. And so that was the second source. And then there was an insurance provision where we took over the insurance policies on these landfills. And that has brought in about $60 million. It was brought in more, but some of it was paid for legal fees to get the money. I believe there may have been some private landfills in this cleanup program. But that is a question for the PCA.
Mr. Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, just as a follow-up, I support the landfill program, mm-hmm. and we need to keep doing that. I think we need to really be careful when we do that on private property. I'm aware of another project, and I'm not going to point any fingers here tonight, but where the state spent a huge amount of money cleaning up a privately owned landfill, and the landowner is going to turn around and make a huge profit on the resale of that land. Now, we should not let that sort of thing happen. And so I just want to put this forward as a caution here with regard to that program.
Okay, well, I see some pollution control agency folks here. That's a good caution for them. Okay. Okay, the one thing I failed to mention is the $90 million was the amount put in the mid-90s. PCA has now spent 81, so the $9 million in here is...
The last, the rest of it?
Mm-hmm.
And Representative Wagenius, if you and Representative Hansen would work with Representative Lanning when you look at that targeted language, sure. That would be helpful. I see no further questions. Any concluding comments? I think we have the entire bill before us, and obviously there's a big challenge, and we'll have to do it rather quickly, but that's the next stage now. Thank you very much. Representative Carlson, you look like you have a...
No.
Tomorrow, members, we have just one item. It is sort of follow-up to Representative Tamar's presentation because there are a number of studies we've referenced and also some BCA recommendations, and there was background that Camp Ripley piece was in the governor's bill, but it's background this committee doesn't have. So we thought, by way of making decisions on those, having the background that his committee had would be helpful. Representative Singlestad's question? I think that's
okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking at the numbers for today from our 12 presentations, and you know, I remember when we started the site visits, we were always saying that for every $1 we had available, there were $4 in requests. Well, the good news now, we've got it down to $1 for every $2 in requests. So my number...
Now it's saying no only to one every out of every two.
Right, right. So my total from today is about $2.1 billion, and with some of that funding in the transportation bill, I think we need to get under 905 GO for that, so we need to, you know, reduce that down to about 42% of what we heard today. So that's going to be some challenges in front of us. But I'm wondering if you could just kind of walk through the timeline of when you think the bill would come to committee, when it would be on the House floor.
Well, frankly, where I'm looking for my finance chair, I don't think we have clear direction. I think they've been so focused on today, and so I don't think we have clear direction at this point about...
I think that's something we're going to be working on tomorrow.
Okay. So at this point, we're... All we know is we have all the recommendations, and presumably we'd be prepared to move pretty quickly. No other questions? Meeting is adjourned.